It's time now to look through the window of baseball with Bruce Jenkins, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors and Truitt and White, the professional builder's choice. Bruce, good morning.
Hey, Marty, what's going on?
Not too much. Just sort of reliving a little bit of the Kane perfect game this morning. And, you know, I said it's kind of interesting. With all that's happened in this franchise in the last 4 years or so, the World Series and everything that's gone on, somehow the Kane perfect game gets pushed aside a little bit, but it was an amazing moment.
Well, it really was. You know, anytime you have a great pitcher at his best, you know, a Koufax, a Marischal, a Tom Seaver, and what it does is just, it defines him, you know, for all time. I mean, when you pitch a perfect game, that's, I mean, a lot of lesser guys have done it, but for a guy like Kane to get his name on that ledger, that it's something that should never be forgotten. And I've heard a lot of people talking about it, the last few days, you know, it's come to their attention at the anniversary, and that he pitched on the anniversary, which was very cool.
Yeah, and he pitched. He almost pitched another no-hitter.
He had another gem going.
Now you talk about Johnny Vandermeer, two no-hitters back-to-back. If Kane pitched a perfect game and no-hitter both on June 13th, I'd say move over Johnny Vandermeer.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be phenomenal.
That'd be pretty good. Well, the other thing we talk about this morning, today's the 50th anniversary of Juan Marichal's no-hitter against the old Houston Colt 45s, and people talking about Marichal. Bruce, give me some of your recollections of Marichal as a pitcher, a fielder, a hitter, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, growing up in Southern California, the night that Marichal pitched was going to be rough. It was going to be 1-0, 2-1. He faced off against Drysdale more than Koufax, as I recall. And those were about the only games we'd get on television in L.A. in those days were the ones out of Candlestick. So we saw all those games. Marischal, you know, with the high leg kick. I loved him as a hitter. He went up there and just took a ferocious cut. He didn't make contact all that often, but he went up there bent on doing some damage, and every now and then that he did. But when you think about a guy kicking his leg, like, way up in the air, I mean, Dontrell Willis, that doesn't come close to approaching what he did. I very few pitchers, I'd say, after the 1960s, I mean, were anything like that. I mean, you see the statue at AT&T Park, that's what it looked like. It was that radical. And for a guy to have that much control with all kinds of different arm slots, I mean, he had an arm slot for every occasion. It was just mind blowing. He was a total original, and you know, that, I'll tell you that Houston team in '63, that was a team waiting to get no hit. I mean, you're talking about Bernie Fazio and Al Spangler and Bob Willis. The cleanup hitter was Carl Warwick. I mean, not to diminish Marischal's credentials in the slightest, but that was not a good outfit.
No, you got Johnny Temple in the ninth inning, and the last out was Brock Davis. And Marischal, I had a conversation with him. I'm going to play it as soon as you and I are done. But if you have a chance to listen to it, it's really pretty good talking about the no-hitter. Hey, Raph, let's do our – Bruce, hang in for a second. Let's do our trivia question for Original Joes. And, Bruce, I'm going to ask you not to answer it, but I want to talk a little bit about Ian Kennedy and Greinke and that whole beanball thing of a couple of days ago. But Original Joes, we have a dinner with winners. We pick our winners at the end of June. If you answer the question correctly today, you'll be in the pool. And here's the question. And I was thinking about it after watching Kennedy come up and in on Greinke in a very dangerous pitch. In all the years of baseball, there's only been one player who's been killed on the field. And Carl Mays threw the pitch and hit this player in the head, and about 12 hours later, he died. He's a former Cleveland Indian. So you tell me the name of the player that was killed on the field. It's the only time, incredibly, that it's happened in Major League Baseball. And I'll give you some choices. Was it Ray Oyler, Ray Chapman, Ray Robinson, or Ray Milland? Those are the – don't laugh, Bruce. Those are the choices.
Ray Ratto wasn't it?
Ray Ratto. All right, we'll put Ray Ratto in. Very good. I was running out of Rays. 415-478-KMBR, 415-478-KMBR. Raph is standing by. And we'll put you in the pool. So Ray Milland, Ray Ratto, Ray Robinson, Ray Chapman, or Ray Oyler. It's one of those. All right. You know, I watched the game the other night, and you know, it was unbelievable to me. I'm watching it. By the way, 415-478-KMBR is the number to call for that. It's unbelievable to me. You know, Greinke just drills somebody. Kennedy throws it right at Puig's face, and then he has the nerve to throw it right up at Greinke's head. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's when it got completely out of hand, because it had pretty much been even out, kind of an eye for an eye kind of thing, and that's when you move on. And for him to throw a pitch that really was at Greinke's head, I mean, he got the shoulder up just in time, but I mean, I'm sorry. That for him to say that pitch got away from him, that's a bit of a stretch for me. I know he's not a headhunter by nature. It's a possibility, but that's when it got completely out of hand. I totally agree with the 10-game suspension for him, because that's when all the whatever logic you might find in the macho world of baseball fights, that was over the top.
Yeah, and you know, Rob Nyer, you know, that SB Nation, they do a nice job. They commented on the 10-game suspension. You know, if you manipulate it properly and with appeals and all that, it could only be one start for Ian Kennedy. And they argued, well, it's, you know, when you get into these kinds of situations, you know, maybe 20 games, so you have at least a couple of starts. And the other thing is, you can't drop the appeal. They said, well, once you start the appeal process, you can't drop it when it looks convenient to take your, you know, take your days off.
Yeah.
So maybe those are two decent suggestions. You know, maybe it should be upped on the suspension. And also, once the appeal starts, that's it.
Yeah, well, the whole appeal process to me is unnecessary. I say, this is what you get. This is what you do. It's not a court of law. It's baseball. This is your suspension. It starts now. And forget about it. The appeal process is ludicrous because, like you say, you can manipulate it. You can allow players play in a against a contending team, sit out against a weak team. That's wrong to me.
Yeah. I think that. But of course, you got to get the union to agree to this.
Yeah, that'll never happen. And because of the union strength, the players are able to do this and get the least amount of out of their suspension.
Bruce Jenkins with us. Bruce, you wrote an interesting column this week about number two hitters in baseball. I loved it. I hadn't thought through this yet. You were well ahead of me on this one. Number two hitters are turning into big-time hitters now. And Manny Machado, Bruce, 30 doubles right now.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is to not waste an out. You don't want to have the game end with your 260 hitting number two hitter grounding at the second while the number three guy's in the on-deck circle. You know, the contrast that you see, you know, the Giants are still playing a traditional way, but, I mean, Scudero is not only a guy who can drop a bunt or hit to the right side. I mean, the guy's hitting 330. So, but, I mean, to think that Trout, Harper, and Machado are all hitting second, you know, exclusively in Machado's case, is amazing. Jose Bautista, Robinson Cano, and Maurer, you know, Carlos Beltran. I mean, this is more than a trend. This is what's happening now. And, you know, I went through all the World Series from 1900 up to the 80s, and almost exclusively the number two guy was a guy like Johnny Logan or Mark Koenig or, you know, just a, you know, Jim Gilliam, Nellie Fox, that kind of scrappy guy who can move the runner over, you know, hit and run. And it's interesting to me that only now are we seeing the change, and it makes a lot of sense. It depends on your lineup. If you don't have a very good lineup, it might be better to space it out a little bit. But if you're a team like the Angels or the Cardinals, I mean, it does make a lot of sense.
You know, I was thinking about Brandon Crawford, because Crawford, when he was in the eighth spot, he said, where are you going to put him? You know, because Scudero's in the two spot. Maybe Crawford could be one of those number two hitters. And the guy's in close to 290. He's got some power. He's driving in runs. Maybe he is maybe he is really a number two hitter.
Could very well be. I just really am so enjoying what Crawford is doing as a hitter. I always thought he could get up to 260. I mean, but my goodness, I mean, the way he goes to left field and he'll drill the inside pitch up the alley, and he's just becoming a real good hitter, period. I mean, there's too much evidence to ignore there.
Yeah, he's a player. Also in the news, you know, this trade deadline, of course, June 15th, as I told the fans a little while ago before he came on, this was the old day of the trade deadline, June 15th, and by chance, I just happened to be reading something this morning and how it came about, and you have to go back to 1922, and the Giants made a trade with the Braves, Yankees made a trade with the Athletics, and got players during the season, and everyone in baseball was appalled by this, because in those days, all the trades were off-season. So the great dynamic commissioner, who he just laid the law down, Kennesaw Mountain Landis said, okay, no more trades after June 15th. And that lasted probably, Bruce, probably into the early 90s, I imagine. That's how the trade deadline came about. So my question to you, you think it should be pushed back further because there's so many teams in contention?
I think you could make an argument for that, but I don't see anything wrong with it. Why not? You know, maybe August 1st. And you're talking about the – I'm sorry, maybe August 15th. Maybe even a little later than that. I mean, there's really – no reason why you couldn't bring it all the way up even to September 1st. I mean, why not?
Yeah, this whole thing is going to, you know, bring up 40 players. You know, you're in contention. All of a sudden, the whole 40-man roster is here, and you're playing against a team that doesn't do that. This is subject to – this is going to come about. There's going to be some modifications. I can see that coming.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed all the extra players coming up. I get so tired of teams with 12 and 13 man pitching staffs limited to a 4 or 5 man bench, you know, and especially in the National League, that gets evaporated so fast in a ball game. I just don't think it's right. I think the roster should be larger just in general. They should be 27 men. And when all these kids come up, it has a great dynamic. But when you get a disparity, when you got one team with a dugout full of these guys, another team with maybe three of them, then that's not an even playing field. I think it should be regulated so that every team has the same amount of extra guys.
Yeah, you declare it before the game starts or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Giants had 19 pitchers going down the stretch last year. You know, they did. And I remember saying it early in September. I said, why don't they have everybody up here? Why are they burning pitchers that they need? Bring up people in a game that's a blowout and put the minor leaguers in, and they did it. The next day they had like 7 people up here.
Yeah, and I think we're in a situation now. I think the hot button guy there is Heath Hembree. You know, when do we get a look at him?
Yeah.
It seems like it's pretty close to that time.
Yeah. Well, the right-handed side is Gene Machi and pray for rain and 2 days of snow. That's about it.
Yeah, in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, right. All right. Hey, thanks for being with us. It's a good game today. Mike Minor has had quite a season, so we'll see. You want to give the answer to the trivia question?
Not Ray Ratto, but definitely Ray Chapman.
Very good, Ray Chapman. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Have a good afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, Marty.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye. That is wonderful, Bruce Jenkins. Always enjoy having him on.